Chapter 16. The king turned back to Abigail.
One more thing before you go. Just a word of caution, if I may. I don't mean to draw attention to your appearance. I mention it only because I know you love the ruler and would never want to disappoint him.
Abigail's chest and stomach tightened. Her friend's warmth and acceptance had made her forget her deformities. But the king's stark reminder renewed her despair, like waking from a good dream to a nightmarish reality. The king continued,
"You know how people in the banquet hall would stare if you showed up looking like that. I suggest before you go, you first..."
Charles' sword flashed with an explosion of brilliant colors.
"First what? Clean herself up? How? Can a leopard scrub its spots?"
He locked his gaze on the king.
"Only the ruler's blood can clean a soiled heart, and all this world's solutions do is empty the blood room of its power."
The king broke away from the stare down with Charles and turned to Abigail.
"If you want to go, go."
He started back the way he came, and as he brushed by Charles, he whispered,
"You'll regret this. You have no idea what's coming."
Charles whispered back,
"I'm not the one who's doomed."
As the king walked off, Abigail stepped close to Charles.
"What did you say to him?"
"The king of the lowlands is the prince of darkness in human form. He wanted to remind you of your past, so I simply reminded him of his future."
Charles glared in the direction of the king's retreat.
"Don't ever listen to him. The only way you can make yourself acceptable to the ruler is by depending on the ruler alone to make you acceptable. And he will. He made you beautiful before, and he'll do it again. But if you try to make yourself pleasing, you will only make yourself detestable in his sight."
He went on,
"If you must look at your deformities, look at them as the Father looks at them, in the blood room, covered by the ruler's sacrifice. When the Father looks at one of his children, he sees the magnificent goodness of the ruler credited to that child's account. If you must look, look where the Father looks, and your eyes will meet his."
His words came to her ears like food to a starving woman. A cottage saying she had memorized but hadn't thought of in years came suddenly to mind, as if being spoken into her ear. "I found you in your ugliness, kicking in your blood. Then I touched you and made you the most beautiful of jewels." Strength seeped into her soul.
"The ruler can fix me."
The prince's burning arrow, with its lethal tip, shattered on impact with Abigail's shield of faith and fell harmlessly to the ground. The flash from Charles' sword and Abigail's shield distracted Anzu for the split second Gabor needed. In a single move, he twisted free and brought a thunderous blow down on Anzu's head. He left the dazed warrior on one knee and rejoined the other guardians. Since Levi's arrival, all six friends had recovered their shields. Without Abigail's powerful weapon of joy, the friends were severely short-handed. But with the array of weapons the other friends held, they remained a formidable force.
"Yes, yes,"
Gabor smiled as he watched the flurry of expert strikes from each of the friends' weapons. When the prince tried to unnerve the group with worry or anxiety, Levi's unassailable, childlike faith inspired them to trust the ruler's promises. 10 warriors surrounded Abigail and Kaelin with a cloud of darkness and tried to pull them down into depression. All 10 got a taste of Laith's mighty javelin, his uncanny ability to find just the right cottage pieces to keep the friends' spirits up. That, combined with Watson's recounting of how the ruler had so thoroughly forgiven him when he ate the berries, soon discouraged the 10 warriors. Abigail stopped to remove a pebble from her shoe.
"These stupid shoes are..."
"Careful,"
Watson warned. Given his analytical skills, the group had chosen him to carry the Stay Alert book. He pointed to the page he had been studying.
"See this? An entire chapter on discontent and complaining. It is one of the prince's most common attack angles.
None of the prince's strategies caught the group off guard. His every move met only impenetrable shields. The presence of seven mountain people in the orchard had drawn a gathering of curious lowlanders. The more people gathered, the more attention they attracted, until it became a large crowd. Murmuring within the crowd quickly escalated from whispering gossip to angry shouts.
"They're mountain people! What are you kids doing down here? They're here to cut down our trees!"
Gabor assigned two guardians to assist Karis in guarding Abigail.
"Surround her," he said. "This angry crowd will trigger memories of the beating she endured at the earthquake. Do not let her give way to fear."
Even as Gabor spoke, Abigail turned toward the orchard and ran from the crowd.
"Go,"
Gabor ordered, and the three guardians followed her. Kaelion nudged Kaelin, whispering, "See that mound? Not a bad platform." Kaelin ascended the mound and lifted her voice above the din.
"Yes, we are from the High Country, and we invite you to join us there. It's so much better than anything in the orchard."
Abigail stopped. Was that Kaelin speaking to the crowd?
"Yes," Karis whispered, pointing. "That's her up on that mound. Your city is collapsing. Come with us before it's too late."
The glow of Kaelin's double-edged dagger, strength and courage, shone on Abigail. All five of the men were occupied with other pockets of hostile lowlanders, yet not a trace of worry touched Kaelin's face. She planted her skinny legs like steel rods in the earth and stood her ground, speaking with the authority of the ruler himself, as if she owned these lowlands. Karis whispered again to Abigail,
"You're no different than her. You belong to the ruler. What can lowlanders do to you?"
Abigail looked around at the mob and spoke softly to herself.
"They're like children on a playground."
She threw her shoulders back and strode boldly westward, straight through the center of the crowd. A woman spit on her, and there were a few shoves, but she kept her attention on Kaelin, whose courage infused Abigail with unnatural strength to keep moving. She wiped the spittle from her hair with her sleeve and stepped up on the mound at Kaelin's side.
"You will be honored for taking that abuse for the ruler," Kaelin said.
Then she pointed to the crowd.
"And you who reject the ruler will be punished."
"I heard your ruler is a man of love," shouted a man.
He waved his arm across the crowd.
"Would he condemn all these people for not following someone they've never seen?"
"They have never seen him because they refuse to look," said Watson as he joined Kaelin and Abigail on the mound. "For a man of love, anger toward that which destroys the good is a moral necessity. One who loves cares, and one who cares can never be apathetic about that which threatens the object of his love."
"Everyone who is not forgiven must answer for their rebellion," Kaelin added.
She raised her hand to the crowd.
"Every knee will bow before the ruler of the kings of the earth, including yours and your king's."
"I'm my own king," said another man.
Abigail ripped a peach from a tree and held it out toward the man.
"This is your king, and it is a merciless tyrant. What does it give you other than regret? Why continue to serve it?"
The man stood silent, his face vacant. Then he approached the tree. He plucked a peach, examined it, and took a bite. He reached for another, and another, filling his arms. The rest of the crowd surrounded the tree like a swarm of bees, devouring every peach and even gnawing on the branches.
"Leave them," Kaelion whispered.
Kaelin sheathed her double-sided dagger, took Abigail's hand, and started back toward the others. When the friends had regrouped, they set out for the border. Gabor addressed the guardians.
"Do all you can to guard your charges from discouragement. See that they do not grow weary in well-doing.
None of them realize how far east the battle carried them. They have a long, difficult journey ahead.
As the group walked, the lowland cloud thickened, and the friends frequently stumbled. After 2 hours of slogging uphill, climbing over downed trees, and straining to see in the cloud, Charles stopped.
"This isn't right. It shouldn't be this dark."
"We need rest," Laith said. "That battle,"
he wiped his brow,
"it took a lot out of us."
"I don't think so, Laith. I'm tired too, but in this territory, the moment you get comfortable, you get captured. The warriors could attack at any time. And if they hit us now..."
He scratched the back of his head, scanning the surrounding trees. "We don't want another fight right now." He turned his gaze back to the group and was met with pleading faces.
"Okay, 10 minutes.
20 minutes later, only Charles remained awake. Sword drawn, he circled his slumbering friends, watching, listening. He would not allow a surprise attack. He was pleased at how effective each of their weapons had been, but without Abigail's joy, they all lacked endurance. Even Charles' eyelids insisted on drooping. He slapped his own face and shook himself. "I should wake them. We need to get moving." He opened his mouth, but before he made a sound, a voice whispered,
"No, don't disturb them. They're exhausted."
Charles froze in place, afraid to turn around. The voice continued,
"Even Laith wanted to stop. If you push ahead without his support, will they follow? Even if they do, they will resent you. They probably already question your leadership. Let them rest, and you will have their favor."
Charles recognized the voice, an old, intimate enemy. Still facing away, Charles' hand moved slowly to his sword.
"You're going to strike me down," the voice said with a chuckle. "Why? You know I'm right. You remember the last time you tried to lead and no one followed, don't you? The humiliation, the sense of betrayal, the fear of losing your position of leadership? Do you want that again?"
Charles raised his sword and spun, setting the blade against the old man's throat.
"What good is having their favor if I allow them to be captured? If I'm driven by fear of people's opinion of me, I am no longer the ruler's servant."
With both hands, Charles pulled the sword back and swung with all his might. It sliced clean through the man's neck. His gray head fell to the ground, and his body crumpled. Charles retrieved the head and held it up. He shuddered at the surreal experience, gazing into his own face as in a mirror. He tossed the head aside and dragged the headless, heartless body away from the group into a ravine. He returned to his friends.
"Wake up, everyone. Time to go."
One by one, reluctant eyes opened. Amid a chorus of groans and yawns, Kaelin and Levi sat up. Then Watson, with a grunt, Laith rose and rubbed an ache out of his back. Adam sighed, put his hands on his knees, and pushed to his feet. Then he extended a hand and pulled Abigail up. Charles lifted his arm.
"Before we go, we need to do something about this cloud. Without light, we'll never make it."
His silent, penetrating gaze fell on each of the friends, moving from one to the next. Some returned only a puzzled look. Watson held Charles' gaze for a moment, then gave a single shake of his head. Laith also met his gaze and whispered,
"Not me."
When he came to Levi, the young man appeared mystified at first, then bowed his head. His lip quivered.
"Berries?" Charles asked.
Levi drew the remainder of an apple from his pocket and thrust it away.
"I'm sorry," he whispered. "After the first bite, I knew it was a mistake. I was going to throw it away as soon as I got a chance, but I didn't want anyone to see."
Charles showed Levi the walk in the light cottage piece and unfolded it for him. As he explained the meaning, He prepared to respond to Levi's objections. He knew from experience that most people resisted this cottage peace, especially those who were new to the high country and loved their privacy. "Let me see that," Levi said, taking the piece. After a moment's examination, he said, "So this dark cloud we've been walking in? That was my fault?" Before Charles could answer, a tear formed in Levi's eye. "I was wrong. Please forgive me. You have my word. I'll walk in the light from here on. No more hiding anything." Levi lifted his eyes to Charles. "What's with the big smile? Are you laughing at me?" "Not laughing. Rejoicing. You were wondering what good your weapon would be? There it is, right there. Most people don't have that kind of unquestioning acceptance when they're caught on the barbs of a cottage beast." Charles turned to the group. "That, friends, is what faith looks like." A slap on the back from Laith sent Levi forward a step.
"Well done, kid."
The cloud lifted.
The prince addressed his warrior ranks.
"Don't give up. I've faced the gift of faith before and defeated it. It can be done, but not by slacking off whenever you get tired."
He burrowed his gaze into a warrior seated against a tree, nursing his wounds.
"Get up. Fight, or I'll strike you down myself."
He turned to the other warriors.
"What seems like an unwinnable war can turn if we keep attacking. Most humans will give up quickly under pressure, and even the mightiest of men wear down eventually."
He was shouting now.
"I have won many battles against far more powerful enemies than these simply by outlasting their resistance. Do not relent."
The beleaguered humans pressed forward. With Levi's faith, Watson's discernment, Kalen's courage, Charles' wisdom, Laith's encouragement, and Adam's insight, they held the warriors at bay. But without Abigail's joy, none of the weapons operated at full strength.
"This is a good fight," Charles said. "See it through. Your confidence will be richly rewarded if you don't throw it away. You need to persevere so that when you have done the Father's will, you will receive what he has promised. Stand firm."
"I don't know if I can," Abigail said. "I'm not as strong as the others."
"You're stronger than you know. Strong enough to do everything the Father requires of you. We tend to give up far too soon."
He paused and looked around.
"Do you see that log?" he said, pointing.
He strode over to it, bent his knees, and heaved one end over his head.
"How long do you think you could hold this end up?"
he asked. Abigail shrugged.
"Here, try it."
She maneuvered under the log.
"Got it?"
"Yeah, I think so."
Charles let go. After 20 seconds, her arms began to shake. 10 more seconds, and she dropped the log to the side.
"Nice effort," Charles said.
"Now imagine you have a baby who will be crushed if you let go. Then how long could you hold it?"
"Longer than you ever thought possible. You would find hidden reserves. You would scream for help. You would hold and hold and hold."
Charles turned to the group.
"Few people ever push their body to the limit, or even know where that limit is until there's an emergency. It's the same with the will. Resist long enough, and the Prince of Darkness will flee."
Charles' face hardened, and his voice took on a tone they all knew so well, that intonation that signaled he was about to say something of utmost importance.
"This is not a proverbial war. It's not a symbolic war. It's not a theoretical war. It's real, with real casualties, and the stakes are higher on both sides than in any war ever fought. When the ruler says resist the prince, he means resist. Be fierce or be dead."
Charles went on.
"Say no to every evil thought within 5 seconds. Give it more unopposed time than that,
and it will lodge itself and become almost immovable. Say it out loud. Be warlike and fierce. Strike fast and strike hard, or it is you who will be struck down.
Abigail stood and cinched her belt.
I'm ready.
The others took up their weapons with renewed strength, and the group started westward. From time to time, the lowland cloud would close on them, the group would stop, someone would confess a stumble, and light would return. Each time, the embarrassment, the sorrow, and the efforts to restore the fallen comrade drained Abigail's energy, and soon became tiresome. Everything about the journey was tiresome. Mile after mile, the drumbeat of footsteps, the endless passing of trees, and the monotony of the lowlands wore on her. As time dragged on, the landscape began to lose its color. The trees, the sky, even the fruit faded to a dull gray. The emotional numbness frightened her. Her time in the orchard had taught her that few conditions were more dangerous than feeling nothing. Her soul ached for a spark of color.
Are we lost? Levi asked. I'm not sure we're even going the right way.
It does indeed seem that we should have arrived by now, Watson said. He looked at Charles. Don't take offense, but given how seldom you visit the lowlands, perhaps another leader might guide us on a more direct course.
How about Adam? Levi said. He knows this place. I say he should take the lead.
A rushing sound in the trees caught the group's attention, pulling all eyes upward.
Is that the wind? Abigail asked.
The sound grew louder, closer, and then turned from a rush to a melodious whistle. A glorious blue cloud appeared above the treetops.
The Father's colors! Levi shouted.
The beauty and movement of the cloud washed over Abigail like water in the desert, soothing the burn of her craving for anything to relieve the boredom. Her soul came alive. The cloud began to move.
We should follow it, said Levi. I think the Father is showing us the way out.
Yeah, I think he's right, Kalin said.
As the group started toward the cloud, Gabor tapped Adam on the shoulder and pinged his glasses with a flick of his finger. Adam adjusted the specs, muttering to himself, I had forgotten about these. He studied the cottage piece he'd been holding, then stopped short.
Wait, he said.
He adjusted his glasses again and examined the piece more closely. He looked up at the cloud and back to the piece. His face turned white.
Run!